Hello there, you again. It's me again, and welcome to your very latest Culturefile digital single. This time, we're in the company of Birgenald Rash, the American-Irish clarinetist who's curated a programme of new music by Black and Latine composers for this year's New Music Dublin Festival. Birgenald presents Bombas, gives 10 contemporary chamber works their Irish premieres, as well as a world premiere to a concerto by Joseph Holman. It turns out to be an unexpectedly defiant event, not just showing off music never heard in Ireland before, but also the work of artists whose livelihood and indeed lives are increasingly imperiled under America's new order, where relatively recent gains for historically underrepresented music are daily reversed. In the context of all this, Birgenald Rash spoke to Culturefile about the composers he's worked with on Bombast and what they are now enduring and resisting.
The program itself is one nurtured from love. It's a love of artists and an artistic practice that isn't often seen or centered here in Ireland, but is making a huge, you know, sort of presentation in the U.S. and abroad. The concert itself features works by Black and Latine composers. Many of the Black composers are part of a collective known as Blacknificent Seven. And it just features a cornucopia of works, solos, some improv, and chamber works, all sort of nestled together to create this sort of overarching feeling of warmth and, of course, empowerment and a sense of ownership of one's identity in the face of experiences and a world that might otherwise subjugate or repress. So it's an exciting program, but also one full of sort of grit and depth.
That's almost, you know, when you describe it that way, that's almost the conversation we might have had, you know, 6 or 8 months ago, you know, that this music was beginning to find platforms all over the place. But literally, it seems to be, for some reason, a central plank of the new administration in America that those platforms disappear or those platforms close to this music.
Yeah. I think there's a fear of centering the other, a fear of sort of acknowledging that those that we have often assumed to be less than or not good enough or incapable of or getting an opportunity because of an EDI strategy or DEI strategy as it is in the U.S., there's a fear of being supplanted and replaced by the other. And that fear is, I believe, fueling a lot of sort of harmful and hurtful practices and experiences via the current administration in the U.S. So it is shocking, and many of my friends and colleagues are directly impacted by this.
And very specifically in the program for Bombast, you have music from Carlos Simon, who is theoretically the composer in residence at the Kennedy Center.
Yes, he is.
Tell us, what is the update on that? For people who don't know, maybe even tell us about the change of background people.
All right. Well, at the Kennedy Center recently, the now president of the United States has appointed himself the chair of the board and has ousted much of the board, if they have not already resigned, and as such has done away with any sort of programming that hints at DEI, from the Gay Pride Choir concert that was going to happen to works by, of course, composers of color. And we've seen a huge defection of artists in residence or performers who are scheduled to perform at the Kennedy Center. Issa Rae, a famous sort of filmmaker, producer, she's recently canceled her show that was going to happen there. And so we're seeing a lot of this backlash because of the U.S.'s president's decision and unilateral power he's given himself. And Carlos Simon, being the composer in residence there, being a person of color, a composer of color, we're not really sure what his status is at the Kennedy Center, whether he'll remain in that position, whether he'll leave. I'm not in conversation with him, so I don't know specifically firsthand, but I'm sure he's faced with an insurmountable question, because it's a matter of principle, integrity, but also bills getting paid. It's a reality sort of thing. And I don't know what the status is currently, but I imagine there is a lot of sort of frustration and angst and anxiety around the current situation. I have friends who are scheduled to do concerts at the Kennedy Center who are in this sort of limbo, not sure if their program's going to be canceled or if they need to take a stand themselves, as so many others have done. So it is a very fraught time in the arts.
Carlos Simone, for instance, I think it's on his website at the moment, and this was in, you know, late February, that he said he wasn't leaving. He's somebody who was going to stay and fight, whereas a lot of people decided, I'm going to get out of there immediately.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, that's a personal choice, and one that, you know, only Carlos can make for himself.
But the great thing is that even if the Kennedy Center doesn't get to hear his music, well, you know, which it may if he digs in there, we are going to get to hear his music in Dublin. So tell us a bit about the piece that we'll hear as part of Bombast.
So Carlos Simon Loop is a string trio, and it's driving, it's active, and all three voices sort of trade the responsibility of leading and carrying the impetus, sort of carrying the momentum of the work, in which case you need all three instrumentalists working in community to yield this result. There's a few moments where they're sort of contending with each other. By and large, Loop is sort of this modo perpetuo sense where each facet needs to be in lockstep with each other to really create that momentum and keep it going. And I think it has a beautiful statement, or rather it makes a beautiful statement about the need for community, particularly in the times that we live in right now, presently, where, you know, building community is at the forefront of so many of our minds, and also what does community mean and what does that look like, and how do we extend community beyond the immediate people in our vicinity and make space for others in community. So I think that piece really is sort of central and integral to this idea of taking up space and ownership and doing so in community with others.
So the Joseph Holman piece is a clarinet concerto, so this is one that you're going to be centrally involved in.
Yeah. It is an Irish premiere. It's a world premiere, actually. It's just recently finished, and it features B-flat and E-flat clarinet and a chamber group of seven made up of violin, viola, cello, harp, bassoon, horn, and percussion. The idea, the impetus behind that particular work is sort of using the clarinet as sort of the standard idea of the status quo. We see B-flat clarinet in everything, orchestras, bands, it's everywhere. It's sort of the de facto clarinet that you think of. And E-flat always seems to be, or has always been, used by composers as this sort of nagging, out there, loud, abrasive voice, whether it's in, you know, Till Eulenspiegel, or if it's in Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, the E-flat clarinet always plays a sort of really bright and sort of aggressive voice. And so in comparison to the B-flat, this E-flat part, or the E-flat, represents sort of this idea of the other, where the B-flat is the status quo, it's the normal, and E-flat's the other, and how do we make space again, making space, making community for the E-flat, and demonstrate that the E-flat has more to offer beyond just its strident and stereotypical aesthetic that we have seen historically. And so in that regard, it sort of, it plays up the idea of the duality and the necessity to see the good in what we have ostensibly have recognized as being difficult or othered in some way, the subaltern. All in concert with the rest of the ensemble.
The piece relates to the work of another composer-performer who is part of the program, Joy Guidry.
Oh, Joy Guidry. Yeah, so that's a special piece. And not to give too much away about that one, because that one's really, really special. Joy's piece is very, and I've been in conversation with Joy, it's very of the moment. Even though they wrote it a while back, or it was released a while back, it is very much of the moment in regards to the visibility and the occupation of space that trans people, you know, take up.
There's a big spoken word element.
It's a huge spoken word element of it. And it actually is the only sort of spoken word element of the concert where the music is, it's void of sort of performance in that regard. And this concerto, I don't idealize it as being directly related to Joy's piece. I see it more as in conversation with this idea of the other. And Joy's piece is very much the very denotative expression of the other and what that looks like in modern days, particularly when we see what's going on in the U.S. around LGBTQ plus rights and trans rights especially. I was just recently talking to Joy, and they were having a situation with their passport and being able to use their passport under their new gender and what that has meant for them and the angst and strife and sort of discomfort they've experienced around that. And so that piece, Joy's piece, is really, really sort of seminal as well. And then you have the concerto that sort of takes this idea of this othered voice that we look at strangely, queerly, and say, what is going on? And it takes that conversation and brings it, I guess, further into the realm of like artistic expression via without words, I suppose, like the song without words.
It's the first piece that I listened to when I was working through the program, and it sets an expectation slightly different to what happened.
It does, and that was sort of the idea. I mean, to subvert expectation, of course, and to really just draw people in, because there's a part of Joy's work that isn't disclosed in the program. There's an element of sort of where does Joy's work fit in. Even though when you see it on the program, it does show up as the first piece. There's more happening than what we what we see right now. I will just say that without giving too much away.
Every day when I wake up, I would be pretty confused on when I go look at the mirror, you know, just get my day started, why I had this gut feeling that I wasn't happy.
Allison Loggins' Hull, their piece Stolen for solo cello, treats the idea of stolen goods, stolen property, stolen people, stolen experiences, and the reclamation of those things, the reclamation, of course, of self and identity, and is a very visceral piece, but I also find it to be quite somber in a way. By and large, the unaccompanied pieces at our president's program are pretty somber. They are pretty sort of introspective, where the performer is digging in and the listener sort of gets to sit back and experience it in what feels like a very meditative way. And Stolen is no different. Stolen is very powerful. But I think all the pieces on the program are, never mind the fact that Allison Loggins Hull herself is a performer, a flautist, a part of Flutronics, and composer as well. There is a level of sort of artistic communication that she imbues in this piece that artist, performer, composer can only do, I say that as someone who has worked with many composers, and I recognize that those composers who also perform work that aren't their own, they write in a way that is very communicative, I find. That's very sort of understanding of the role of the performer in interpreting their work, if that makes sense. And so this piece, Stolen, is like that. It is for the performer, but it's also within understanding that there is an audience to participate, or at least partake of that piece. The piece is very palatable, I think. And that's a lot. I think when we think of new music, we have this idea of this sort of esoteric, out there, beeps and bloops and blops, and just this sound world creation. And what we're seeing, particularly by the diaspora of Black composers in the U.S. and you know, further afield, that the music is by and large tonal. There is a sort of a central... There's a grounding in this tonal world that we occupy that I don't want to say, this is all, of course, my own opinion. I don't want to say it's a rejection of the atonal sort of experimental style of composition that we've experienced but I think it's more of a reaction or maybe a reaffirmation of their disposition, these composers' dispositions to be heard and to be seen and to even just lead forward in sort of the current zeitgeist of what's going on. I mean, our music, by and large, African-American music, is music that moves. It is music that has been the soundtrack for generations, whether people realize or not. It has been the bedrock for so many other forms of music. And so it makes sense to me that it would be the case in classical as well. And so what we're seeing is this return or this resurgence of tonality that also challenges the idea of what contemporary music is. So I think, by and large, when programming this program, I'm very much reminded that the pieces we're experiencing are accessible in the terms of its contemporary music, but it is very accessible.
It's funny in terms of that discussion we were having about the Kennedy Center and so forth, and you know, the regime now has a style of art it doesn't like. Well, actually, if it sort of didn't look at its philosophical objections to this program, music like stolen cello piece is the sort of music that, I wouldn't want to call it reactionary, but traditional music fans, that's the sort of music they might enjoy.
They would. They very much would. And that's the irony of it all. It's like you're afraid of something you would actually enjoy, and your fear is bigger than your willingness to experience that because of whatever idea you have around that. And that's funny how fear works, though. Fear sort of keeps us locked and chained and prevents us from growing and living and experiencing new things. So I'm very grateful that there are audiences here in Ireland that are interested and willing to experience new music and to experience, you know, even if they don't enjoy everything on the program, you're allowed not to enjoy it. You know, that's a part of the experience. But show up and be prepared to leave feeling some kind of way about something. You know, that's really powerful stuff. And I think a lot of us, particularly those in that aligned with that sort of current administration in the U.S., don't want to feel anything. They're afraid of feeling. Yeah, but we need to feel, or we're humans. We need to experience.
One other composer we might talk about a little bit, which has a kind of like strong roots in African American music, Sean Okpeblo.
Yeah, Sean Okpeblo. I've met him once when I was at the Sphinx Conference in Detroit last January as a speaker on a panel. He was also a speaker on the panel.
What's the Sphinx Conference?
So Sphinx is an organization in the U.S. Founded around the idea of a string competition for Black and Latino, Latinx, whichever word you use, composers or performers. And it was a string competition for young emerging artists from these underrepresented backgrounds. And it has expanded over the last 20 some odd years into not only having that, but having also the Sphinx Virtuosi, and also having this conference that happens every year where they bring thought leaders from around the world and from major orchestras and institutions from around the world to this venue, to Detroit, where they sit and to discuss the goings-ons, as we say, in classical music around equality, diversity, and inclusion. They've been doing this before it was like the thing to do. And so Sphinx Con, as it's called, or Sphinx Conference, we were there, and Sean was on a panel discussing his work and, you know, this idea of the ivory tower of composition. And I had been following his compositional style because I'm always like listening to what's going on out there. So Sean Okpeblo's There Is Always Light for clarinet, bassoon, and marimba is sort of like a gentle cradle song That then gets sort of bubbly and ruckus in the middle when we go to the 5/8 section, and then gently sort of washes away and sort of fades away. I say cradle song, I think of like the Bursuse or something in Stravinsky's Firebird or whatever. But it starts off very gently, and it bubbles with sort of optimism. The marimba voicing is really lovely, and then you come in with the sort of plaintive sounds of the bassoon, which, you know, we associate with wisdom and old age and maybe a little bit of jovialness. And it truly is a piece that sort of reminds you that there is, in the midst of the darkness, there is always light, and it's just around the corner. And he's very much a part of this Western tradition of writing. I believe he's currently professor of music theory at Wheaton College Conservatory of Music. And his writing is reminiscent or imbued with the very foundations of African-American culture, which is the Black church. You know, it is very much a song for the heart. And I find it to be very, very soothing, but also a bit challenging. So, yeah.
It's like it puts you to sleep and also wakes you up.
And wakes you up. The rhythmic language he uses is also, I've been noticing, this is just me, but a lot of the rhythmic language I've seen across the composers is interesting, because I'm seeing a lot of odd-numbered sort of runs where instead of getting fours and sixes, which you would typically get in Western music, you're getting a lot of fives and sevens. And I find it interesting. And a couple of the composers have also done these off-placed rhythms where triplet figures don't fall on the downbeat, but they fall on the offbeat and go across the beat. And it would have only been sort of a shock if one composer had done that. But because I've come across that rhythm a number of times in the pieces I've been working on in this project, I'm like, this must be. Something's going on here. We're really leaning into something here. All I can think of is sort of that sort of the palpitation of the harp, the sort of this heart skipping a beat, or the cross rhythms we get in African music. I'm seeing, or at least I think I'm seeing, remnants of that. And growing up in the Black church and singing in choirs and stuff, the use of the vocal line, like I find all the writing here, particularly with Jesse Montgomery's piece, it's all so very vocal, and it leans heavily into these Black traditions of jazz and gospel music. And you're getting that in this program as well. You're getting sort of these vernacular, very sort of improvisational styles of singing that you'd see in church, you'd see in jazz. You're seeing this sort of kind of written out in the way the composers are writing some of these lines. And it just tickles me to death, because it's a language I grew up with. And to hear it in this context of a classical setting really sort of gives me goosebumps.
I was just thinking of Terence Blanchard at the Met and so forth. I was just thinking, that's going to stop, you know, unless like there are billionaires actively donating to the Met, that like little door that seemed to open really recently gets slammed shut again.
But that shows how easy and how precarious people like me, who look like me, our existence is in this field, in most fields, really. If by one person getting a new job, a new presidency, is able to prevent all of this from happening, it shows just how ephemeral our I guess, worth, value, our output can be, or can be seen as. And it's really sort of sad, because I don't think too many other communities have the risk of such immediate erasure, right? That their work can be so easily erased, forgotten, dismissed, and repealed, as it were. And it's shocking. And so I challenge all of those companies out there outside of the U.S. who have the ability to fund and to bring forward those artists who might get their doors slammed in their face because of our current administration in the U.S. to do so, to step up and you know, to sort of continue those careers and to continue that legacy and to continue the growth of that work. Because we are at the precipice of some really great, exciting stuff that has been for far too long ignored, forgotten, downplayed, and to be in a place where we could possibly lose it because of ego and hubris and fear, basically, is really just unfortunate.
I was talking there to Burginal Rash about Burginal Presents Bombast, which is the title of the concert showcasing new music from Black and Latine composers at New Music Dublin 2025. That's in the studio at the National Concert Hall, Dublin, on Thursday the 3rd of April, starting at 1:30 p.m. Details and tickets from newmusicdublin.ie.